Good afternoon. It is a great honor to be standing in this place and in the presence of the Sovereign's representative in Ontario, Lieutenant Governor Elizabeth Dowdeswell, as well as Elder Caroline King, the former chief of the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nation. Elder King is a statesperson of remarkable vision and wisdom, and her honor is a constitutional guardian and storyteller and collector of stories. So I'm doubly grateful to the vicar for this privilege as we formally celebrate the accession of Queen Elizabeth to the throne in 1952, 67 years ago. Not only does this allow us a chance to publicly acknowledge the most extraordinary symbol of duty and service any of us alive today will ever know, it also allows us to give thanks to the evolution of the very notion of the crown in this amazing land we are all so fortunate to share, even during the coldest days. Curiously and coincidentally, I am also in the interesting position to report to the vicar and all the clergy in this lovely cathedral, and indeed to all the priests and all the bishops and all the pastors and all the moderators and all the churches in all of Her Majesty's dominion, some interesting information I gleaned during a trip a week ago to London. It was very exciting. I was able to visit Her Majesty's Chapel Royal at St. James Palace and meet with the mysteriously titled Subdean, Canon Paul Wright. This is thanks to a recent honor Queen Elizabeth bestowed on St. Catherine's Chapel in Massey College, my old haunt at the University of Toronto. In 2017, it was renamed Her Majesty's Chapel Royal, only the third Chapel Royal in Canada, and like the other two, only because of the chapel's association with an Indigenous nation, in this case, with the Mississaugas of the New Credit. Now here's the useful gossip I learned from Canon Wright. As many of us know, the Queen is not just a person of great faith, she's also a temporal leader of the Church of England. Canon Wright told me that he's often asked whether the Queen is a member of the High Church faction of the Anglican Church or the Low Church faction. It is apparently a compelling question to devout Anglicans, and they need to know the answer. And his answer is to the point. Neither, he always says. The Sovereign is neither High Church nor Low Church. She is Short Church. He went on to explain to me that anyone preaching before her enters danger land if he or she exceeds 4 minutes. If she's not there, he added, we might hazard 8 minutes if we're feeling particularly brave. So, Your Honor, I feel I'm on notice. You are the Queen's Regent in Ontario, although you're not quite herself, so I'm going for 8-ish. But only if you start your watch now. My aim today is threefold: to take due note of the life of service of the Queen, to honor the special relationship between the Sovereign and all the Indigenous nations of this land, and finally, to pay tribute to the innovative and evolutionary genius of the Canadian Vice-Regal offices. 2.5 minutes for each. Honoring the Queen's commitment to service of our country and to all Canadians is the easiest task. As I said, there are no parallels to this remarkable record. Her commitment to service and to honoring the Canadian way has been consistent and enduring. During a period of great constitutional stress in our relationship in the late 1960s, the Queen made the point that she was not, quote, a fair-weather friend. Those were her exact words. She has never veered from that promise, not once. But if it resonated in a particular way with any of our number, it resonated most profoundly with the Indigenous nations. The close relationship between the Crown and the Indigenous nations of North America goes back to a visit and exchange of gifts between Queen Anne and the four Mohican and Algonquin chiefs in 1710. It was memorable because the chiefs were received formally at St. James Palace as honored leaders of their nations. Treaties of alliance between the Crown and those nations were solemnized, and a tradition of honoring treaty agreements was begun. And it was begun with a ceremony. More than with any other components in our national life, save perhaps the Church itself, it is the Crown and the First Nations and their leaders who understand the deep significance of both sacred and civic ceremony. Listen to these words from Dr. Robin Wall Kimmerer from her illuminating book, Braiding Sweetgrass. Dr. Kimmerer is a hugely respected professor of environmental and forest biology at SUNY, the State University of New York. As a distinguished academic botanist, as well as an indigenous woman steeped in her people's culture and history, she's been able to combine contemporary scientific research with traditional indigenous teaching. This makes, in my opinion, Braiding Sweetgrass one of the most remarkable books of our time. And here is what she said about ceremony. Ceremony focuses attention so that attention becomes intention. If you stand together and profess a thing before a community, it holds you accountable. Ceremonies transcend the boundaries of the individual and resonate beyond the human realm. These acts of reverence are powerfully pragmatic. They are ceremonies which magnify life. Ever since members of the royal family started coming to Canada, the bond between the First Nations and the Crown has been pivotal to both, and the ceremonies they have shared with each other have magnified their interdependence, an interdependence long misunderstood or ignored by the larger population. This interdependence is not just a curious relic of history, because it holds out tangible hope for a better relationship between all of us in Canada. Now, why do I say that? Because it allows us all to acknowledge openly the most wretched, self-inflicted wound in our whole history, a wound that still festers, but is at least, and at long last, being addressed. And in addressing it in this manner, we have a means to move ahead and beyond it. I get asked from time to time, and with some umbrage, where was the Crown when those treaties were being abrogated and ignored? I'll tell you where the Crown was, on the barricades. Listen to these words of Lord Dufferin, our first post-Confederation Governor General, who traveled to British Columbia in the late 1870s and tried to get the legislature there to understand the folly of its ways. It still makes painful reading and hearing. The Indian question in British Columbia is not satisfactory, Lord Dufferin lectured the provincial legislators a decade after Confederation in 1876. The government of British Columbia has neglected to recognize what is known as the Indian title. In Canada, this has always been done. No government, whether provincial or central, has failed to acknowledge that the original title to the land existed in the Indian nations and communities that hunted or wandered over it. Before we touch a single acre, we make a proper and legal treaty with the chiefs representing the bands we are dealing with, and having agreed upon and paid the stipulated price, oftentimes arrived at after a great deal of haggling and difficulty, we enter into possession. But not until that moment do we consider that we are entitled to a single acre. If we fail to do this, Lord Dufferin implied, if we fail to partake in honorable negotiations, we also fail to honor our word and thereby negate our own laws, thus breaking faith not just with established practice, but also with an equitable future for Canada. There will be an enormous price to be paid one day, he warned, and indeed, that day is upon us now. Lord Dufferin did not get a lot of return invitations to BC after that stern bromide, but the admonition is still there, still capable of arousing guilt and chagrin, and also anger, whenever it is evoked. But it also stands there to prove that the Crown kept the faith for all our better behalves. Today, it is taken up in various ways, especially in the spirited evocation of responsibilities espoused by the most recent vice-regal leaders of this province, none more consistent and eloquent than the generous-hearted person representing the sovereign who is with us today in the front pew. In 2017, for example, on an official visit to Thunder Bay, just to cite one example, Her Honor made a point of specifically detailing what she felt was the twin nature of her own commitment to duty and civic responsibility. As the representative of the Queen, the highest office in the province, Elizabeth Dalzell said, I am privileged to fulfill my duty of friendship with Indigenous peoples in the treaty. It is a sacred trust as relevant as my duty to ensure the province always has a functioning government. In this, Mrs. Dalzell continues embellishing the kinship between the Crown and First Nations and the land. She does it almost everywhere she goes, as she listens to the stories the peoples of the land love to share with her, as she honors their efforts and the efforts of everyone working towards reconciliation. This kinship, bound up in a concept of shared responsibility, is at the heart of a notion known simply as the honor of the crown. The notion comes down to us not just to cover the recognition of past treaties, past pledges, and past history, and not just to accept current realities, current responsibilities, and current obligations. It leads in powerful, logical, inexorable, and as Mrs. Dalzell has evoked, in sacred direction to future possibilities and future opportunities. Listen to what Chief Stacy LaForme of the Mississaugas First Nation said after Her Majesty named the chapel at Massey College one of her special places of worship. Citing the Royal Proclamation of 1764 and the subsequent Treaty of Niagara in 1768, Chief LaForme said these formal undertakings cannot be understood without acknowledging the relationship Indigenous peoples have with the Queen and her family. My people's ancestors were at Niagara when the silver covenant chain of friendship was extended into these lands over 250 years ago, wrote Chief LaForme. It is in the spirit of that gathering that this royal chapel will serve as a place to gather regularly and polish the chain for this and future generations. Confederation set aside our treaty relationships, beginning a very dark chapter in the relationships between Indigenous and non-Indigenous peoples of these lands. The establishment of this Chapel Royal, a space to reflect, learn, and reconnect by Her Majesty and the Massey College community 150 years later, is a profound act of reconciliation. It will become, in effect, a new council fire for our peoples to gather around in love and in friendship. This is such an interesting juncture to conclude on, that both Crown and First Nations have survived in the manner that they have is due to many factors, but a symbolic as well as a practical part of the reason is a kind of unacknowledged mutual support arrangement. The First Nations have always looked to the sovereign to uphold the honor of the crown, that intricate network of treaties, laws, and promises that underscore both the separateness of the First Nations and also our interdependence. And the crown, in its turn, has cheerfully allowed itself to be usefully co-opted by the First Nations to act as a symbolic conscience of the nation, an emblematic promise that we will try to correct the injustices of the past and build positively on what we share. So, as we celebrate another year in the reign of Elizabeth II, queen for longer than most of us can remember, we can also give thanks for a unique and special relationship that may yet help to lead us through reconciliation and heal the scabrous wound we must all attend to in our own ways. That said, I have, I think, already gone past the 8-minute mark. I can sense the sovereign's 4 minutes of patience irritatingly transgressed, so I will conclude ASAP with two short but eloquent greetings that are also prayers. Megwich, and God save the Queen. Amen.